there. My name is Kirsty Rice and I'm one half of the Two Fat Expats. Now, we've been expats for a very long time, long enough that we remember expat life without AI, which is something we're going to talk about today. Now, if you call yourself an expat, or maybe you prefer calling yourself an economic immigrant, you might want to join our Facebook group, Two Fat Expats, where there are over 40,000 of us. There's a wealth of information to be found when it comes to moving all over the world. I am butchering this intro, but I will keep going. My podcast partner in crime is Nikki Moffat, and we've lived in Indonesia, Malaysia, Libya, Hong Kong, South Africa, Canada, the US, Qatar, Germany, and Denmark. Okay, let's get started with this week's podcast. Nikki Moffat, how are you?
I am fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. I don't think I'm as well as you, though. I don't think I'm as happy as you. Why are you super happy today and this weekend?
I'm happy because this weekend, my team won last night by a lot.
By a lot.
It was so good. It was so, so good. Nikki, we always kick off with a couple of questions. And I have, I have something that's been buzzing around in my head for a long time. I'm almost a little bit obsessive about this topic at the moment because I am currently creating an e-course that's got a lot to do with expats and friendships and the rest of it. And so I guess it's raised, I've had to ask myself a lot of questions while I've been writing it. And one discussion that keeps coming up with, I guess, women my age, who are women in their 50s, who are expats, is we talk a lot about confidence. And because to make new friends, I believe you probably need a bit of confidence and you probably have to appear to have a bit of confidence too, because we all know that when you're making new friends and meeting new people, if you're the person in the corner that is perhaps lacking confidence but also feeling bad about themselves or unhappy about where they are, do you know, that's, it's hard to make new friends in that sort of, when you're in that space, do you know, when you're not happy with yourself. But so I've been thinking about the thing of confidence and whether it's an age thing, whether it's a stage thing. But I've wondered, Nikki, when were you actually your most confident and did it have anything to do with your expat life?
Yeah, so this is a good question because I from the last time we talked, you know, we talked about me and having no friends and how that was working. So this definitely plays into thoughts and processes I've been having. I would say that, yes, Hong Kong Nikki was probably my most confident. And so, yes, it did have to do with my expat life.
Yeah.
And it also had to do with me basing my self-worth around my job, which I know is not the best thing to do. But it had to do with the fact that I got a job that I would never have gotten in Australia because I was employed by an Australian company in Hong Kong, but in Australia they only employed certain people from certain universities, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't go to one of those universities. And so I didn't ever expect that I would work for that company. I'd applied once before and I hadn't got to the second round. But so that job also exposed me to so many things that were part of my job, but also part of my expat life. Like I went to 10 different countries, you know, like I was always traveling. I learned just so many things. And the other thing that I thought about, it was also the youngest I ever was in my expat life. So I don't, like, when we say age and stage, I do take that into consideration. You know, maybe without the job, I would have maybe felt the same, but I think that I was more confident. And then my next move was super difficult and I lost a lot of confidence that I didn't get back to for a long time when I moved. So yeah, I really think that was to do with my expat life because it was all sort of joined together like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, when I break down the expat Kirsties, like there's Indonesia Kirsty, Malaysian Kirsty, Libya Kirsty, et cetera, et cetera. And I love that you called yourself Hong Kong Nikki because it is like it's different people almost, isn't it, for the life that you're living at the time. And I look at Malaysian Kirsty and I just wonder who she was. Like I, you know, arrived with one child, left with two. I left with an 11-day-old baby to go to Libya and live in Libya, where I did, you know, I knew I was going to have to stay in this random guest house or whatever. But he said,
with the goats in the basement.
Yes, with the goats in the basement and the whatever. And I think about how I just wandered into this, you know, rando playgroup, not knowing anyone, sort of saying, hi, do you mind me asking how you found your obstetrician? Do you know, blah, 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 blah. That whole thing. I drove in KL traffic without a, you know, there was no Google Maps. You know, I just remember knowing what G's building looked like and trying to aim myself towards it and driving that way. I wonder too, is it youth? And is it because you don't know what you don't know? And so now I look at it and I go, what were you thinking? Do you know, like you had small babies and you launched off to do this? Or is it just that when I was younger, I just had this wonderful ability to just not take anything too seriously? Do you know, like we get so serious as we get old about everything, and we don't laugh things off in the same way that we do when we're younger. So yeah, I am consumed with this and doing a lot of research at the moment, sort of, you know, trying to work it out, because, you know, the other day I walked out of the golf club after playing golf in the morning, and there was a woman standing at the front, and I would have just normally sort of nodded, said hi and sort of kept walking thinking, oh, yeah, well, she obviously plays golf here too, blah, blah, blah. But this woman very brightly and confidently sort of said, hi, I'm Jo, and she'd, you know, and I said, hi. And so we started, you know, the ritual of how long have you been here, blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, I've been here for 5 days. And straight away I was like, oh, you're in that mode of I've been here for 5 days. I need to meet some people. I need to, you know, say, because she said things like, wouldn't it be great if we all wore name tags? And I was thinking, you don't say that when you've lived somewhere for 3-4 years. And she could have just smiled and let me walk past, but she was on a mission, you know, to do this and meet people. And that's where I think there's all sorts of different types of confidence. You know, maybe we can still do the walk into the room and introduce ourselves, but maybe we're not confident to, and this is me, very me focused at the moment, is I'm not confident in when I'm thinking about, okay, well, how am I going to promote the e-course and do that? Making a silly reel on social media or doing a Instagram live or doing all that stuff, it sends me into, you know, just instant fear of, oh, God, I do not want to do that. So we can do the old stuff, but maybe it's the stuff we don't know how to do that is the scary stuff, the new stuff. You know, I think about how my grandmother had a video recorder and my mother used to have to go over there and set it all to tape for her and do the timer and you know, my grandmother just couldn't work it out. And then I look at my mother who is a, you know, she's a qualified accountant and really she used to do all the, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people's pays using, you know, amazing software, whatever. She's a woman that took on a lot of new technology and adapted to things, and now that's sort of her with her iPhone and her grandchildren, you know, asking them, can you make my text bigger and can you do this? And I think you could play around with that for 5 minutes and have that sorted, but it's the scariness of, well, no, I could end up having no phone, you know, have the phone not work at all. It's that scary. So yeah, I really think there is a lot in it of youth and learning new things.
Yeah, and also changing situations, right? So like I moved to South Africa thinking, oh, I know how to be an expat because I've just done it for 6 years in Hong Kong.
Yes.
And I walked in there and I I didn't know what I was doing. And what worked for me in Hong Kong did not work for me in South Africa.
Yes.
And I mean, it was new, and, you know, I had to reassess like why I thought things worked and why they didn't. And like that really did shake my confidence for a long time. Like, you know, even making friends, like it was a much smaller community, all sorts of stuff. And so I agree. Like, and then it takes you a long time. If you get knocked around, it takes you a little bit of time to even build up the confidence you had to do what you were doing before.
Yes.
Sometimes. And let alone new things. So when new things happen, you're like, oh, I don't know. Why would I try that when I've already lost my confidence about this thing that I thought that I knew how to do?
Yeah.
So it can be, you know, that's back to age and stage and things, but it can be all those things, you know. And people talk about women in their 50s, you know, becoming confident and not giving a bleep, expletive word about everything. But I don't necessarily think that's the case.
I don't think it is.
You know, and I feel,
yeah.
And I've gone very old school. I've gone back to the very, very beginning. Like I was standing in a line in a hospital in a radiology department yesterday or the day before. There's a woman behind me, and I thought, okay, Nikki, just talk to this lady. Like, she doesn't have to be your friend, but just like say something.
Yes.
So I said, oh, you know, I recognize that outfit. Does it come from this designer? And she said, yes, it does. And so we had a lovely conversation about that. And then I don't know who she was. She just went on her way. But I was like, I have to sort of go back to the beginning in terms of like, okay, yes, now I'm living here, and now I have to decide how it is I talk to people and what it is I do and start that process.
Yes. So, yeah. Do you know, I heard a conversation the other day. We had drinks over Easter, and we ended up with a lot of people here. We did that thing, you know, where everybody invited a couple of people. And when you've got four children and one of them invites five kids and another one invites another five kids, and you and your husband have basically walked all the way up and down the street and sort of unknowingly invited just about every neighbor. And all of a sudden we had a huge party at our house. With a couple of cheese boards, pizza was called, but it was a great night. But I listened to, because there was a woman here who was visiting a family member, and I heard her say, you know, that she had started playing golf. And then there was a really good friend of mine who has lived here, you know, her whole life, and she has also started playing golf. And the really good friend of mine's was baffled because the woman from Melbourne said, oh, I play to sort of meet people, and, you know, it's really just about connecting with people. And my friend was really, she sort of said to me the next day, oh, God, no, you know, I'm there for the competition. Do you know, I'm worried about my group because they're a bit slack and they don't always come and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think I'm going to have to change a different group and whatever. And I thought, that's the thing with repatriation though, isn't it? And also with different stages of expat life is maybe you're not at the place for the same reason. And
yes.
Yes. And they are just so not recruiting and not wanting to make any friends, and there you are wanting to make a connection with people, which if you want to really give someone the heebie-jeebies, you look desperate for a connection.
I'm here to make friends. And I mean, we've talked about this a lot. We've said that, you know, there are people that shut up shop and say, I'm done with friends.
Yes.
I'm not getting new friends because
yes,
I've had too much heartbreak and too many of my friends are in different parts of the world.
Yes.
I'm just too bored because new people are so exhausting because they always want to know, why is this different and why is that different? And we always say you have to hook up with some people who are at the same stage as you.
Yes.
Like if you're new, you have to kind of try and probably find a couple of new people because they're people that are still exploring, still finding out,
yes,
you know, all the places to go and things to do. And then you don't want to pepper the old people who've been there longer. You don't want to pepper them with questions because you want to be friends with them, but you don't want to piss them off and like have them, you know. So there's all these sort of different groups or sort of levels you have to push in your internal files and get out specific things for specific reasons.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that's definitely part of the process. So yeah, no, confidence, yeah, it's all, and that's all part of it as well. And with an with Expat Life, you just having to do it all the time. You're moving and you're having to create. And I think it's really clear, and I know you've had exactly the same thing. You move in one country and you're like, right, okay, this is my group of friends. I know how I got them. I can do this again. And then you get to another place and there's no one. I mean, we moved to South Africa. Half my friends in Hong Kong were Australian, because there's a lot of Australians in Hong Kong. You know, we lived in apartment blocks. Our kids could go downstairs and play together, blah, blah, blah. I moved to South Africa. No Australians, none, zero. And we lived in these big houses on estates. And, you know, that's where I started to play golf, because that was a social skill. Same thing. I did it to meet people. But, you know, like, it was a totally different lifestyle. And then I moved to the US into like a regular neighborhood where there was no expats, you know, like just no one. To talk about tiny community, no community. Like, and these were all people that were just had all their friends and they didn't need anyone else. And I had to really wriggle my way in there. But I had a hook because I was different. I had an accent, blah, 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 But now, and then I moved to Germany, and then you're back into like different kind of community, blah, blah, blah. And so, but now I'm in Australia and I've got no hook. I'm not different. I'm not interesting. There's nothing to recommend me. Just me. And I have to try and get out there and find some friends. I think pretty bloody hard.
You've just given me the name of this week's podcast, which I'm going to write down. I've got no hook. Oh yeah, I know. Anyway. I know what you mean, and you know, and in my half and half life, where I flip back between, you know, here and there and here and there, I find my thing is trying to, you know, jump back into expat life, and I really don't want to talk about how much I come back here, because I want to keep my friends there and I want to stay in the same groups and I want to be with the same people. And the last impression I want to give them is that I'm not invested in my expat life. And then I come back here and I spend a lot of time really squashing my expat life, not wanting to talk about me, because it all sounds so different from just the everyday. I don't know, Nikki, do you find this, that you almost get the feeling of, no, I sound like a tosser. You know, I sound like I'm really trying to big note myself, you know, if I talk about travels and what we've done or where we've been or whatever. I know I'm not, this doesn't sound very grounded.
Whenever I do it. No, but whenever I do it, I just find, I did it this morning. I was talking to a guest and I said, oh, I see you've got a sticker on your car for this school in Brisbane. I said, all my nieces go to that school. And they said, oh, you know, who, you know, what family is it? It's a reasonably small school. Yes, they knew my nieces, blah, blah, blah. And they said, oh, and where are you from? And I said, oh, we moved back from Copenhagen, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, how long are you there for? Oh, well, we were overseas for 20 years, but, you know, like, and then you go into a story and you're like, I'm such a tosser, but if I don't tell the story, it sounds stupid.
And then I sound like a criminal that's been in jail for 20 years if I don't tell this story. Yes.
And then she said, oh, well, we did 17 years. We're in Sydney and Singapore I was like, I've been going to Sydney's like being an expert. Because if you're from Brisbane, I guess it is. So anyway, they'd done 17 years away, like backwards and forwards between like two postings in Singapore and two in Sydney. And I said, oh, when did you come back? And they said 2019. I said, oh, that's not very long ago, you know, like.
And how were they going with their repatriation? You know, so we talked about that.
No, they were fine. Sorry, it's not 2019. Sorry, it was 2000. It was a bit earlier than that. Yep. But less than 10 years. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. So all the kids, like, they'd all been born overseas, remembered their life, blah, 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 blah.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was just interesting. But you'd be surprised how many people you start that conversation with, like, oh, I'm a tosser. And you can tell people just like, okay, that's enough now.
Yes.
But I have done it 3 or 4 times and people have said, oh, yeah, me too. You know, we were mostly everyone I meet was in Singapore. So obviously I missed a lot of people by never living in Singapore. I have found, you know, but then we have talked before about how someone did come in once as a guest and said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't deal with that on my phone because, you know, I do live internationally. I was like, God, you sound like a tosser. But that was me. Like I didn't know how I could think that he was that. But yet, you know, round and round
because
in circles.
Because there
anyway.
Is that thing. Yeah. I'll tell you when I do it the most and I regret it is because I have a 4-digit PIN number here. And I have a 6-digit PIN number, which is completely different in Qatar. And I cannot, you know, the bank decided what my one was going to be here, and to change it now would affect everybody's life because, of course, everyone's got access to my card, don't they, wherever they go. But I always arrive back to wherever, go to the supermarket, and do not know my PIN. And I am frantically standing there while they're putting through the thing, trying to search through my phone with all the reminders that are giving me, you know, what I have to remember my PIN. I always get it wrong. And for some dumb reason, because I once again feel like a criminal when I'm putting the wrong PIN number in, I feel the need to tell the person, oh, sorry, I just flew in last night. You know, from Doha, and I have a different PIN, and I think, oh, you sound like such a wanker right now, needing to tell them you've been on an aeroplane and you've, you know, travelled to get here, sort of thing. But yeah, but the thing is, you're walking around feeling like you should have a big sticker on your head that says, "I have just
I'm new. Yes.
I've just landed. I'm new." You know, like. I'm you know, in the beginning days, I'm jet lagged, I'm lost, I'm confused, I'm tired, nothing looks normal to me. The supermarket seems crazy. I've forgotten how half the things work here, even though I was only here, you know, 2 months ago. You just feel like there should be something. It's like when you've got a really bad back and nobody knows that you've got a bad back because you look normal, do you know, or something you feel like that.
Well, it's an invisible disability, yes. Right? Like that's what it's like. It's an invisible immigration, and that's why they're called invisible immigrants. Yes. Like the third culture kids or the cross culture kids.
Yeah,
because they're walking around looking like they belong, but they don't feel like it on the inside. And I have the same thing.
Yes,
you know, but when you speak, you sound like you know what you're doing.
Yes.
Like, well, you've got that right accent, so therefore you should know.
Yeah.
You should know how to do this. You should know how to use the checkout at the self-service checkout. Yes. And you should know, you know, what to do with your Medicare card. Why would you come to the doctors without your Medicare card?
Yeah.
No, it's on my phone. I don't know. Like, you know, like all sorts of things. And they look at you like you're a 50-something-year-old woman. Hello.
Oh, geez, I can't work out why you don't have any confidence. Now on that, and then we'll move on, Nikki, but I was going to say there is hope because I did see a fantastic interview with Jodie Foster recently who said that she too lost a lot of confidence in her 50s. And, of course, you know, we're not mentioning the obvious thing, which is menopause, and that is a huge factor in it because there are physical things that are happening to you that and things in your brain that are making that happen. But she did say – her confidence returned at 60 because she thinks that it is truly at 60 that you get the I don't give an F because you have gone through all that rubbish and you've come out the other side of it going, okay, the time to live is now. I really think, and for those who are struggling through new babies and toddlers and other parts of your life that might be a struggle, that 50 really is – the best time of your life, but you perhaps don't realize it at the time because, you know, G and I are in this amazing phase at the moment where we're down to one child left at school and we can, you know, do all these wonderful things together and make all these wonderful plans together. You know, we had a moment on Thursday night where even though we're here back in the country where you're thinking I should be spending all this time with my children, you also have to remember your children don't always want to spend all of their time with you. They have lives and they have things that they're doing, you know, and you say to your child at boarding school, I'll come and take you out for dinner. And they say, I have got a monster math test tomorrow that is worth, you know, 80% of whatever. I can't go out for dinner with you and dad. And you're like, oh, oh. And then the other one says, oh, I've got to work too. The other one says, I'm working. And the and you're like, oh. So G and I went out for dinner at the local restaurant that is way too expensive to take all of our children to. And, you know, yeah. But when it's only two of you having the degustation, it's only $87 each as opposed to six of you. So, and we took a lovely bottle of wine. Nikki, we went for dinner at 5:30. We're at like grandma time. Oh, yeah. I tell
look,
you,
I'm telling you,
it is a great time.
We joke here. We joke here about Bergara and how it's full of the median age being 54, which is I'm younger than the median age. Never happened in my life. We sometimes are waiting for 5:30 because that's the first time the pub takes orders for dinner. So,
yep.
And sometimes we drive to a different pub because Sam goes, well, that'll take the time up if when we drive there by the time we get there. As opposed to walking to the one up the road. Yeah, correct.
And then you, because you, I remember having four kids and going out for dinner at 5:45 and thinking one day I'm going to be a grown up again and go out for dinner at
7:30 yes, and 8 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock. And whatever. But no, what you don't realize is you want to be home on the couch by 8 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. So many good things to do. And bed. Like I have friends that I stay with sometimes on the Sunshine Coast. And I often arrive after they're in bed. And they're like, just let yourself in. You know, 9 o'clock, they're in bed. They're off.
Yeah.
You know, they're up at five and off to the gym and doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
But early to bed. And same with my husband. Early to bed. Off he goes. And so I'm like, okay. Well, at least I've got a little bit of the evening to myself. But, yeah, no, 100%. No, early to eat, early to bed. It's all good for you. Early to rise. Up and out.
It's good. So, a public apology now to all those people I bagged for that, including my own grandparents. But there is something in it. There really is something in it. Okay, Nikki, you have a question. What's your question for today?
Oh, so I want to ask you about AI. So in general, we talk about AI and we think it's made huge inroads in the past 2 years because since the launch of ChatGPT to the public, really. So people talk about the changes it's made and the massive changes to come, particularly in the next 5 years. I don't know about you and your child that's leaving school this year, but I've got one leaving school this year and, you know, they're talking to them about, well, you don't know what you should do next because we don't really know what's going to happen. Like the school's giving them this sort of career advice as well. So, you know, are kids allowed to use it at school or uni? Are they not? But also AI and the expat. So how will AI make expats' life easier?
Mm.
And so then I thought, well, you know who I should ask about that? I should ask ChatGPT about that. So I went to ChatGPT and I said, you know, how can AI make expats' life easier? And I found out that expats are early adopters. We've been using this stuff for years.
Yes.
So in terms of Google Translate and what I found more useful in Europe, Deeple.com, Waze, multi-currency banking apps, you know, apps that can you know, help you with all your different things.
I feel like I use those currency banking apps at least twice a week as an expat.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, that's true. We are early adopters. We've been using this stuff for as long as it's been around and not necessarily everyone in every country does. But then I went to the group. I went to the trusty 40,000 Fatterati and I asked them about AI and how they use it or not in their daily expat lives. And it was – I got some amazing responses, which I find super fascinating and – things that I hadn't thought about before. So, for example, Nova said, Nova, who is, of course, we met in Singapore at the Fatterati meetup and who's been a long time member of the group.
Who we both follow on Insta and look at her daily walks.
Correct. That's right. On the beach.
Shout out to Nova.
I honestly don't like AI. Some great tips and advice come from small blogs and sites, and AI is going to scrape these for content, meaning that the people who produce them won't get the hits they need, and then they'll stop doing it.
Yes.
Meaning AI has less content to source from, meaning the stuff will be old and out of date or just plain wrong, which, as we know, AI frequently is.
Yes.
And people just trust it.
Yes.
So while I love an app and the apps that I mentioned, I'm going to avoid AI for research purposes and try and stick with actual people.
Well done.
I might have to change my search engine, the horror, but I'm already sick of seeing five-year-old Reddit threads instead of useful info, which actually is super true and really on the money, right?
Yes.
So we think of ChatGPT as being this amazing thing because it can just gather everything on the internet and give it to us. But if we're going to ChatGPT and we're not going to the sites individually, then people are going to stop producing it. The people are going to stop producing it.
Yes.
Because they need the hits on the site to have the advertising and to generate their income. So I thought that was a really good point.
Yes.
And while I'm embracing, and I use ChatGPT every day as well, but I was like, good point.
So what excellent do you use ChatGPT for every day?
Oh, well, Kirstie, I have a real estate agent's license.
Yes.
So I use ChatGPT a lot for property descriptions.
Ah.
So there's only so many ways you can say a property is by the beach, or, you know, because we use this for our accommodation business. So we use it for that kind of stuff. We sometimes use it to help politely word responses to reviews where people have been less than kind in their review. And instead of saying, you don't know what you're talking about, you ask ChatGPT to word for you a response that would include these five things that you want to put across, but you're replying to a guest and so you want to be polite, and they give you, ChatGPT helps you with those things.
Right.
That's just two of the things that I use for when we're naming new properties. So when we get new properties on board, we like to give them a name, like, you know, Sunrise Villa or something like that. And so we go to ChatGPT and we say, give us 10 names for this property. This is it. These are all the things about this property. This is all the benefits. This is where it is, blah, blah, blah. And ChatGPT gives us a lot of names for properties.
Yes.
So we use it like that all the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I use it day to day like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was really interested in when, because you asked this question in the Two Fat Expats Facebook group.
Yeah.
And you asked someone specifically how they used it in their expat life. And I thought it was brilliant because they were saying that they're in Mexico and that one of the questions you might ask is, who is Benito Juarez and why are there so many things named after him? And I thought that is so true, because that is something you would usually ask a person after you felt comfortable enough meeting a person, or you'd feel like an idiot because you'd think, well, why don't I know who that person is? And am I going to offend someone if I ask who that person is? But they said they also use it to plan a 5-day itinerary for them, going to a new city. They use it to practice their Spanish. And they said, and I love this phrase, I ask it to think like a cultural anthropologist and help me understand how the idea of family is different in Mexico. The school system is different. How does that work? A friend of mine wants to start a tequila business, and over dinner I asked Chat to do a comparison analysis on George Clooney's tequila brand and The Rock's brand and what accounted for the difference in valuation. I thought, I'm too busy at the dinner party drinking all the tequila to think about asking that question. But all of those things are absolutely brilliant for people who are new to a location, aren't they? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%. But.
But. Can you trust it? Can you trust it? And do we sound 110 when we say that? I don't know.
Yes, but you're right. But is there an Amish buffet?
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to ask you. Is there an Amish buffet?
Okay.
Because another answer in the group.
Yes.
Kirstie.
Yes. Tell me.
So another answer in the group said, we just had a perfect storm of AI and nefarious clickbait actors. Someone posted in the travel group a couple of articles about a restaurant, but couldn't find it on any maps. Turns out it's totally made up. The websites look legit and have some legit content, but then have also made up content that included interviews with the restaurant owners, backstory and address, the whole work.
Why would someone go to that much trouble? Is it just solely to prove that you can mess with people?
No, it's clicking. Every time a website gets a click, like if it's on Google Ads or something like that, it's been a thing about click, and that's why clickbait headlines and everything like that. So it's been a thing that there needs to be another way. It should be the quality of your character, the content of your character, not what you look like, basically.
Yeah.
So she said, it struck me as super worrying because I always pre-research restaurants before we travel. And I don't know how anyone can tell the difference between made-up stuff now.
No.
And then she added the link, which we can add in the show notes. We can add the link to the Amish restaurant.
Yes.
The reporting on it. But anyway, and she lives in Alaska. So anyway, it was just really interesting that while it is, and like we say about all new things, there is a lot of positive things yes. that we can do. And we've discussed a lot of positive things that we can do. And then there's also a lot of things that can be slightly worrying and also traps that expats might get tricked into when they're going to look for a fancy restaurant that doesn't exist.
Oh dear, that is very
anyway funny. So that's what, so do you have any thoughts, Kirsty, about how you might use AI or how you use AI on the current basis?
Yeah,
you,
well, I really like with the group? I really liked your point that AI is not just ChatGPT, that AI, we have been living with it for a long time. And yes, I do the currency converters and the Waze, and, you know, have big discussions with other expats about whether Waze or Google Maps, you know, is best and blah, blah, blah. So I like it for all of those things, but I haven't embraced the ChatGPT. And I think that is because I think of myself as a writer, and those things that Nova mentioned, and Nova herself is also a bit of a writer, is what the worry is. It's like, well, whose stuff have you scraped to get this, and are we losing that? Do you know, I was talking before about this e-course, and I think, well, once that gets out into the ether, who's going to use everything that I've taken all this time and effort to create and give it away for, you know, nothing?
And who's to know who's, like, if someone finds it and it's just for free or for $10,
yeah,
right, or $5, $2 for this, who's to know that someone else created it? Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
So it's,
yeah,
it's, you know, like, it's like someone, I don't know, there's something on my algorithm now about somatic yoga or something. And I'm
God, I get that all the time too. And the yoga.
And I'm like, yes. I don't want to pay for anything. Like, where can I find some free stuff? And then thinking now, having this conversation, the free stuff I find is probably been ripped off from someone yes. who actually put time and effort and charged time anyway.
And, you know, we know that right. this has been happening forever. We all use phrases that were Shakespeare's and we use them every day in our life. You know, you said a phrase before about being an invisible immigrant. And as you were saying it, I realised that a good friend of mine who has three children who are all expat kids and are now all repatriated, she was telling me how she said, oh, my daughter uses this phrase that I just think is so clever. She calls herself an invisible immigrant. And I remember, and you've used it. Well, someone very clever thought up that phrase, you know, and obviously you can't lay claim to these things forever. But I'd like to give that person some credit, you know,
yeah.
that because it is a fantastic phrase to describe how you feel. I know. But we've got to move on, can't we? We can't. You and I can't sit here and talk and thank everybody in all history
all the time. But that's a very good point. And so there has to be new ways to acknowledge and to repurpose and to reuse.
Yes.
And, you know, there just has to be new ways, and hopefully we'll find it. The world will come to a new way of things.
It does, getting right off topic though, it does worry me that it's all these tech bros that are the people that are in control of this though. You know, we had, remember, Nikki, you and I both watched a show called Years and Years, which had Emma Thompson yes. as a very Trump-like character. And it was frightening because it was all things that were highly plausible. And yesterday at dinner with my two boys, they were talking about whether they'd get the Elon Musk, you know, chip in their head, because it would be so good, you know, of the things that you could do. And, you know, we were all joking about it and whatever, but I was like, guys, that is so like years and years. That's, remember, there was the character, all she wanted was the chip in her head. And, you know, my eldest son sort of said, yeah, it's, you know, they're going to get us though. You just know they're going to get us, because we'll all want the chip, but then suddenly we'll be paralyzed until we've watched six ads before we can download the bit that we actually want to use. And I, because I mean, I have said for many, many years, you know, I just wish I had a chip to give me a language, you know, to be able to land in France and, you know, imagine just being able to speak the language. But imagine landing in France, being able to speak the language, but then having to watch the equivalent of a YouTube, you know. You'd be watching your somatic yoga, you know, you'd have to watch 4 minutes of that before you could move on, or we'd have to buy, you know, or something or other. Yeah.
Clean talk is the other thing I get all the time. Hashtag clean talk.
I get the ones put your feet up on the wall and do the Pilates. So you get those ones. And all I can think, when I watch all those people with their feet up on the wall is, who is cleaning your walls that you've got your feet up on the wall doing the Pilates?
100%. 100%.
I think that must be aimed at renters.
Kirstie, now I know the Gather Round is one of your favourite things this week, but what are your three other favourite things?
Look, I watched something the other night called Life After Life. I think I watched it on the ABC. It's definitely got a very British television BBC feel about it. Made in 2022. I don't know if it was, you know, acclaimed through its reviews or whatever, but both my husband and I really, really enjoyed it. And the premise of the series is, what if you got to relive your life again and again and again? Do you know that you got a fresh start each time? And it tells the story of Ursula Todd, who's born in the sort of first half of the 20th century. And so it starts with her birth, and the cord is around her neck. You know, it's 1910. So, the doctor has to be called, one of the staff at the house. It's very old English, you know, lovely big house, you know, palatial gardens, whatever. But Ursula is born with, you know, the cord around her neck, and then you see Ursula get born again, but this time the doctor gets there in time and sort of removes the cord, and then you see Ursula get sick with the plague, and then you see Ursula make sure that the nanny doesn't go out that day where she's going to catch the plague and bring it home to the family, and so it goes. And so you spend a lot of time at the beginning thinking, well, does she know that she's controlling this, or is it just she's getting a sixth sense each time when we all get those feelings, you know, of I don't feel safe here, or I don't feel good about this. Anyway, it really shows you the difference small sliding doors moments can make in your life. We see, you know, we see a scene where she is abused by a brother's friend that he brings home from school, and then how that affects who she marries, her self-confidence, the fact she dropped out of school, all of these things, to that when she decides not to be anywhere near that person when they come to visit the next time, what it means to her life and what those life choices are. Anyway, I just really enjoyed it. It's only 4 episodes. So if you want something that you know you're not going to have to commit to for, you know, an entire week. I've had a friend, you've met my friend Con, he was telling me the other day that he just cannot commit to a television series, that it took, that everybody who's raving about The Gentleman, he said it has taken them 4 weeks to watch it because they just can't commit to sit down and watch it. So if you're one of those people, it will suit you. The other thing that I'm a late joiner to is The Bear.
Yes, The Bear.
And I only got in. Love The Bear. Same. And I was not remotely interested in it. I think G and I tried to watch it, you know, maybe did one episode and walked away.
It's one of those ones that.
And it wasn't until they have just had an amazing Emmy season where they won just about everything. Jeremy Allen White, who plays the lead character of Carmi, he won.
I loved him. Did you watch Shameless?
Yes.
He was amazing.
So if for those who aren't aware, it's about an award-winning chef who returns home to Chicago to manage the kitchen that his deceased brother has left behind. But it's a family sort of sandwich shop. It has an incredible knock your socks off cast, but it's just good. It's very punch you in the face in a couple of sort of scenes of reality, but it is really, really great writing, great actors, really, really good. And my third thing is going to be The Big Swing season two. I love season one. I am addicted to golf. I love golf. It is my everything. So no surprise that I loved season one, but season two has all the juicy goss of the Ryder Cup, where Rory McIlroy just lost his bananas out the front. So you get to see all of that because it's being filmed, and so you sort of see behind the scenes of what went on there. And just one little last one, because I know this makes four, but I love her, Angela Hicks. She's on Instagram. She recreates fashion, but she makes fashion out of bits and pieces at her house. So it might be garbage bags, plastic bags, lolly wrappers, whatever. And she is amazing, like, with what she can do. You'll see a picture of someone walking into the Oscars, the Emmys, the Grammys, the whatevers, and she will make that outfit look the same, all in a click, 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 click. Very clever. I love that we still have people on the internet doing things like that, Nikki, that are just so original, you know, that you haven't seen before. Brilliant. Loved it. Loved it. Tell me yours.
Okay, so I've been watching The Three Body Problem on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's a sci-fi one. It's based on a book.
Yeah.
And it's based on a book by a Chinese writer, and it starts in China, and it starts during the Cultural Revolution. But the crux of the story is that an alien race,
right,
called the Santai Ren, is headed to Earth to colonize it. And through intergalactic communication, they're trying to stop science. They're trying to slow down science because they're not going to be here for 400 years. And in 400 years, our technology would be advanced enough to defeat them. But if our technology stops developing now, we won't get there. And there's some really, I've read lots of reviews about it. There's some really interesting moments in it. So they talk about the scientists, these five scientists who studied at Oxford together, it's different from the book. They make them from all different countries, so it's a more international appeal, studied under a professor at Oxford. They end up, through various means, playing this video game, which is like a VR headset, and when they put it on, they're basically taken and they're speaking to the aliens, but they don't really realize that's what's happening, like they're in the beginning. And they're taken to this place and they have to basically solve problems to keep developing the universe. So everyone's going to die, and how do they fix that? And then they sort of keep going back in. And it's so complex, but it's quite interesting. It's science fiction, but it's not. It's a story about culture, and it's a story about so many things. But one of the things that at one stage the alien says to them, they said, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you stopping our science? And the alien goes, well, you know, how many years did it take you humans to go from apes to people? How many years did the Industrial Revolution take? How many years since you invented the internet? And then the person responding goes, oh, I see what you're saying. Like, we are actually developing at a super advanced pace now.
Yes.
And our pace will soon outpace ourselves. Like, we think everything's taking so long, but it's not. And it was really interesting because you sort of reflect on that to go, oh my God. But then it sort of flashes back to sort of the mastermind of the whole thing, and and she called the aliens, like the aliens called out and she responded, and that's why they're coming. And the reason why she did that and her backstory. And it's, I don't think I'm explaining it very well, but it is really, really good. And I recommend it.
Oh.
I think it's quite good. I recommend it. And just give it a go. You'd probably have to give it 2 episodes.
Right.
I think it's 8, and I think it's 8 episodes in the season, but you'd probably have to give it 2 because it is a little bit all over the shop, but it does, because there are so many strands, but then it does tie together. So
yes.
I think you might like it. Give it a go. Probably Henry's already watched it.
Yeah.
So you can ask him.
Well, Henry just appears to be studying constantly. You and I.
Oh, good work, Henry.
Yes, you and I both have children in year 12. And, you know, for some of my children, you wouldn't have even noticed that they're in year 12. It didn't appear to stop their lives at all. But I have, it appears my final child is very much on task. It's a little bit worrying, you know, they all have to get X amount to get into whatever course. Yep. And whatever.
Yep.
And there's a lot of calculations of, you know, I need to get this,
oh,
this
my
and this.
Goodness.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Very different. It's a very different kettle of anyway. Fish. Yes. So yes, it has disrupted his television viewing, but.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. We'll tell him after he finishes his next lot of exams.
Yes,
he
definitely.
Might like this.
Okay, what's
he
your
and
next?
I like the same things.
Yes.
The next one is Lie to Me, which is it's an oldie. It's from 2009 to 2011.
Right.
It was 3 series. It was about the world's leading deception researcher. His name's Dr. Carl Lightman.
Right.
And he studies facial expression, body tone and language, and he can tell when a person's lying and why they're lying. Like, it's a procedural. It's like, you know, Law and Order or, you know, one of those things. Like, every week there's a new problem to solve, while the key people in it, their characters also develop and their relationships develop. But it's just so good. Like, it's just really good. Apparently it got cancelled in the 3rd season because it's from when seasons used to have like 25 episodes in a season. Remember that?
Yes.
It used to go for nearly half the year.
Yes.
So the first 2 seasons have like 25 episodes and the 3rd season has 10. But it's because people thought, the ratings started dropping because people thought that they had learnt all they could about lying and why and how people lie, which that was the feedback they got at the time. But I don't know, like, it's sort of in the vein of The Mentalist a little bit, but not really. Like, I find it much cleverer than that. But Tim Roth is in it. He's an English actor. And it's based around him, you know. It's one of those shows where the man is the lead and then the women are all in the supporting role. But I actually really enjoy the show. And I've watched it before, but I'm watching it again. And it's like one of those, you know, I'm like, oh, no, this is really good. And it's over 10 years old and I feel like it holds up.
Mm.
You know, sometimes you go back and watch those shows and you're like, oh, no, what? This was not holding up now.
Yes.
So anyway. Okay, so that's my second thing. And my third thing is, oh, it's just a personal little thing, is that I've given birth to a poet, but it was 21 years ago. But my child at university is studying creative writing, and this semester they're doing their introduction to poetry. And every week they have to write a poem in their tutorial and hand it in, and it's based on different things, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, they are sending me every week their poem. And I just enjoy them so much. And I'm just aghast at what poetry my child can write, because I don't know where they got their skills from. Definitely not my husband or I, but we just so enjoy it every week. And it's just really, it's a really lovely thing. So it has been one of my favorites.
You know, Nikki, you should be so proud, I think, of 3 things. Number one to me is the fact that they want to share their poetry with you. Like that yeah. really shows that they feel you are a very, very safe space. You know, a lot of people wouldn't share that with a parent. You know, anything creative can be like, oh, they'll just tell me what's wrong with it, or they'll just tell me how I could have suggest what I should have done or whatever. So well done you, because that is huge. And maybe those with little children won't realize that, because when you have little children, they want to give you everything and put it up on the fridge and do whatever. And then all of a sudden something happens in those teen years where, you know, I remember very much tug of wars with books of kids, you know, yeah. Show me your portfolio now. So yes, but also too, that they're writing. I mean, because we all know what the therapy of writing can do of putting things out on a page. But three, you shared with me some of that poetry yesterday. You sent it in a text. It was breathtakingly good, like really good. I mean, I am a big fan of Your Firstborn and just everything they've done. But that was really, like, they are so artistic and creative.
Yeah, I just can't think, like, some of those lines, I'm just like, how can they, that, yes. I'm just like, it's just a perfect line. Like, and I don't know anything about poetry or writing or anything, but I'm like, I can just hear it and I say it and I'm like, oh, it's amazing. Anyway, it's my child, also, I'm totally biased.
Also, Nikki, I think you should share because, you know, we would have a lot of people in the group that have neurodiverse children. We are talking about someone who, you know, was diagnosed as being neurodiverse as a, I don't know, how old were they?
Four. Years four. Yeah.
So it is so hard to get into your child's brain once they become a teenager, right? You're forever searching for how do you really feel about this? How much of this is an overreaction, or how much of this are you keeping from me because you don't want to hurt me, or how much of this is actually true but you've in your young mind are making it more than it needs to be. But poetry just gives you what the real deal is, what's really going on. Well done you. Well done you.
Very proud of them because I think they're doing great and, you know, they're getting the good marks. I said, well, even if I don't know about good poetry, your lecturer likes it, so that's good. Anyway, so that's just been my favourite thing because they've just started really sharing and so it's good.
That's great. Okay, so that's us, Nikki, and
perfect.
We are hoping to come back the first week of next month. We'll be back again.
In your ears.
So good to catch up. All right.
Yeah, really lovely to speak to you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.